How does a New York boy get to Wisconsin?
Wow, that's a long story. That's a long, long story. Well, I was in the military for a long time, and this is my last stop.
Oh, no kidding.
Yes, and we fell in love with it, and that was back in 1999, and I retired from the military in 04. And my kids had moved around the world and different schools, and we didn't want to do that anymore. So we decided to settle down.
Wow. You get to Chicago much? Yeah.
We used to. Not as much anymore. I go to the Met games down there a lot every year.
Yeah, I'm very familiar with where you live. I do a lot of work in actually all over Wisconsin, but yeah, I do a lot of work in Chicago. I do a lot of work in Milwaukee.
Oh, what part of Milwaukee?
Really the whole area. I'm actually closing a business right now in Sheboygan.
Okay, sure.
And yeah, we just closed a business a few months ago in Fond du Lac. Another one in Madison, or kind of outside Sun Prairie, outside of Madison.
Right, Sun Prairie, yes.
Yeah. So very familiar with where you are. Beautiful country.
Yeah, definitely, especially in the summer. I don't know so
Yeah.
much about winter, but summer's pretty nice. Yeah. So how you been?
Everything's great. I'm out here in California.
Nice.
I lived overseas for about a decade, about 9 years. I lived in Europe, and I lived in Israel, and I lived in Singapore.
Oh, nice.
And then came back to the States the beginning of 2016, and
Okay.
I've been out here ever
Nice.
since.
Why California?
My oldest son at the time was a chef here in San Francisco,
Oh, okay.
and you know, like all of those plans. So I moved to be closer to him, and then my middle son was in LA, and I thought, okay, I'll just be on the West Coast. And then my son in LA moved to Nashville, and my son in San Francisco moved to Connecticut. So, you know,
Okay.
so much for that idea.
Right.
But we love it here, so we stayed. We decided to
Nice.
stay. Yeah, it's really I live about an hour north of San Francisco, kind of
Okay.
a farming community, or it used to be a farming community. Very nice.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of what I
So
live, farming community.
I like a rural community as long as I have access to a city if I want that, you know.
Right.
I don't mind a little bit of both.
So what got you into this podcast? I know I'm asking all the questions here,
But no, that's all right. So I for years I have felt, and it's certainly been seconded many times, that we had a sort of a unique childhood. And I'm a big writer. I do a lot of writing, and I had this idea that I was going to write it all down. And every time I did, I just realized that I have one point of view, and I was going to shortchange the whole story by having one point of view. And actually, I interviewed Riles a few weeks ago, and it proved out, like, he told the story, and it was this amazing story. It was just this hysterical story, and I was like totally missing in action. I wasn't part of it. I wasn't there. And I just thought, wow, you know, if I had decided to do this by myself, that would not have gotten in.
Right.
And so I thought, okay, you know what? We just need a ringleader, and we'll collect the stories and ideas from everybody. And that way, lots and lots of different points of view will be represented. And it's bearing out that way. It's kind of shaken out to be just like that.
Wow.
Yeah. So, I'm interviewing Joni Hyland, Marianne Cook. I interviewed John Begins, who, you know, I could interview John Begins 16 more times and I still wouldn't be done.
Yeah,
You
he's got a
know.
memory like I man.
No, You know, John, this there needs to be a word for people like John. He's a connector.
Oh, yes.
He knows everybody, and the stuff he can say about people and where they're located and what are they doing right now and how many kids they have and who they married to. And you're like, Beggins, I don't even remember that guy.
Right.
And you remember him like you saw him yesterday, and he'll say, I did see him yesterday. No, Beggins is a treasure trove, and he just has that kind of a social brain.
Right.
Stuff that he brings up, names of people that he brings up, I have to really work hard, you know, to get there.
Right. That's right. Yeah, it's amazing. Yeah. That's kind of what, yeah. As I was reading your text about some of the questions, it kind of brought some things like what, you know, you said Braddock Park. To me, Braddock Park was more of a, because I was the younger one of most people.
Yeah.
I was in the same grade, but I was younger, almost a year younger than everybody.
Oh, yeah? I don't remember that.
My experiences were, it was, to me, it was almost like a place I can go, because I went to a different school, grammar school.
Where did you go to school?
I went to American Martyrs, and everybody went to a Lady of Lourdes.
American Martyrs. Wow. That's right.
And yeah. How I got even connected with it, because I lived on Vanderbilt Street with Bobby.
Right. Bobby Green. I remember your house. Yeah.
Right down the block from Bobby Green. And we would always hang out together. And then Bobby's like, hey, you know, these guys said, let's go down to Braddock Park. A lot of things happened down there. I'm thinking, yeah, you know, but Braddock, you know, I living on Vanderbilt Street, I think me and Bobby were the furthest ones away from every, you know what I'm saying, on the way home.
Yeah, I think so.
Everybody would go. And then me and Bobby be left walking a couple more blocks till we got there. To me, at that time, I was in seventh grade when he decided he talked to me about it. And I'm like, wow, that's like a foreign country. You know what I'm saying? But he told me.
It's the other side of Springfield Boulevard.
Right. Other side of Springfield Boulevard, past that, Braddock. You know, you're going past the Lady of Lourdes. And growing up, being from American Martyrs, moving down to Queens Village, but being in sports and knowing the names and playing against the kids that he told me would be at the park, I was like, man, I would like to meet them. You know what I'm saying? Because I was always in competition with them, was always looking up to a Lady of Lourdes, because we were a small school. You guys were a big school, and you guys would always win everything, and you'd kick our butt, you know? And I'm like, damn, I got to meet these people. So it was kind of interesting when I first got there. And it was pretty, you know, and it became more of a, you know, now I look back, a place I can go to where I didn't have the stresses of school with American Martyrs, all those friends. And I could go down there and not be the stresses of hanging out with the people in your, you know, because back then, I mean, our block had like 50 kids on it. Yeah. Our little, from 89th Avenue to 90, you had 50 kids on it. So you had like a whole little park there, but going every like weekends to Braddock Park, it was like a different place. I felt grown up, you know what I'm saying? Like, wow, I'm going someplace different, meeting different people. It was pretty cool.
You were a big baseball guy.
Big baseball, yes. Yes, I love baseball. Yeah. And I played with Tom Beggins since I was like 7 years old.
Yeah.
You know, we were on the VFW and Braddock Avenue VFW team together. I didn't know him, you know, personally. We just would get together during baseball season and we'd go our own way, you know. And then to hear that name again through Lourdes, playing against Lourdes. And also then he says he hangs, you know, Bobby tells me he hangs out at the park. And I'm like, well, we got to go back there. You know, I got to go there. And that's how I started going there, was through Bobby Green.
What do you have an earliest memory of being there?
Earliest memories are probably, you know, as you know, drinking back then was like big, especially at the park. That's my memory. I would go down there. My dad would give me like $2 and I'd buy those little Miller Nips, you know?
Yep.
Drink four.
Actually, I think I have a photograph of you drinking a Miller Nip.
And that was a place where
with your baseball hat on.
With my baseball hat on, probably, yeah. Probably looking stupid a little bit, but that's fine. and that was probably with no shirt on, right?
Yes. I think you know the picture that I'm talking about.
I think so, yeah. And, but the people there were just, I just got along with everybody. It was nice.
It was an incredibly accepting group, right?
Totally. And, you know, I don't know if you, my whole, but I had met a, from Johnny Beggins' neighbor. I think her name was Karen Gem, if you remember that.
Karen Gem, yes, yes.
I met her cousin, who I started to go out with. I actually married her eventually and divorced.
Oh, really?
And divorced 6 months later, but
okay. All right.
And no, that's right. That's it's part of my life. And but I would always stay, and she was from Franklin Square. And I was thinking about all the connections that people make and everything like that. Now you can see with Facebook and how this person knows back this person, and especially Johnny Beggins. And so I started going out with a girl from Franklin Square. And I would go down there every weekend, and then, you know, we'd break up, and then I'd come back to Braddock Park. Everybody would be like, well, sure, now you come back, you broke up with your girlfriend. But they were very accepting, and it was a place where I can go and, wow, I didn't have to worry about, oh, you know, you left us to go to Franklin Square, now you're coming back to us, because they were very accepting. And, you know, you could, it was great that way, you know, hey, Johnny's back, cool. And then I'd leave again, go back out.
I think part of it was because the group was so big that you weren't letting anybody down by not showing up.
Right.
There was always, and when you came back, it made the group even bigger. So, right. You know, glad to have you back too, you know.
Plus then everybody went to high school. Everybody went to different high schools, which was so unique to many other different neighborhoods. Like I went to Holy Cross. You went to St. Francis Prep.
Yep, Johnny, yep.
Johnny went to Molloy. You know, a lot of other people went to Molloy, a lot of people went to Cross, some went to Van Buren, and then they brought people in. So you got to meet more people, and your world got bigger, felt it like it got bigger.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just, that part to me was just great, you know, you met more new people, and it was just crazy.
And interestingly, when you speak to those people, the folks that came from out of town in high school, they would describe it the same way you're describing it, which is, hey, I heard about these guys, you know, hanging out at Braddock Park, and I was really excited to go. So they had the same experience just 5 years later than you did.
Right. Right. And it was just a place to be. And, you know, it was cool. And you had so many different groups. You had like, I always felt like we were the, I wouldn't say jocks, but we hung out by the basketball court kind of thing. And you had the older kids hanging out on the other bench with Jerry Fleming, and he was a big character, you know, and just crazy. And everybody knew what hole, you know, what hole in the fence you could run through if you get the cops come.
Right.
And it was interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. So you didn't have a girlfriend in the group, right?
You know, I don't remember. Originally in seventh grade, I knew I went out with somebody back in seventh grade. I think I bought her a necklace. I guess I would. Back in the day, you know, you bought everybody, your girlfriend, a necklace.
Yes, yes, yes.
And I don't remember her name. I'm trying to. She was around, but never. After that, after we didn't, I mean, I went out for probably 2 months. It's probably my first girlfriend.
Yep.
But then I met the girl through Karen Gem, which is like between eighth and ninth grade, or ninth and tenth grade. And then we stayed together forever, kind of until, you know, got married and divorced. But yeah. So I had a girl.
What do you remember of Big Jerry, Jerry Fleming?
He's just a funny guy, man. He was, I always loved his wit. He was quick.
Yeah.
He was just a quick, funny guy. Big, he was big. He was just a presence.
Yep.
You knew he was there.
Yeah, Johnny Begins has some great Jerry Fleming stories. They're really, again, stories that I never knew of existed, and yet Begins, you know, could tell them in grave detail.
Right.
Just extraordinary things. And there's now a plaque. I don't know if you're aware of this.
Yes.
A gold on a plaque. Bench. Yeah, on a bench there. Apparently, recently, they renovated the park. It's not called Braddock Park anymore. It's called something else. And they ripped the bench down that had the plaque on it. And someone called somebody else's attention to it. And they went in and they screwed on a brand new plaque for Jerry.
Wow.
That's the power of this guy. You know,
right.
You know, he's been dead for, I don't know, 15 years, and he could still move people just that fast.
Right. And he used to call me and Bobby Berjikov, the village idiots, but it was funny.
I remember that. You know what it was? I don't know if you remember the main gate of the park over on Fairbury. That was sort of like the entrance to the stage.
Right.
And Jerry would stand next to the benches, next to the basketball court. And as people came onto the stage, he would announce you. So, you know, I was, here comes Mickey the Dickie and his gang of dicks.
Right.
You know, that was me. And then he would just, as people walked in, he would have a name for you and he would say something funny about you. And, you know, most of the time people smiled and kept walking. And, you know, sometimes, people like Pat Orvis would start to cry because Jerry would just do terrible things to him.
Yes.
But but yeah, that was sort of the entrance and you would get your names there. And I feel for the guys that never had a name, you know, that wasn't teased, because, you know, if you were teased by Jerry, it means you were loved by Jerry on some level.
Exactly.
You know, he didn't waste his time with people he didn't like.
Exactly. Right.
You know,
that's fun. I actually drove my father's station wagon through that gate. I remember bringing it home and he asked me what happened to the door on that. One drunken night, I guess.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
I'm happy to say I don't remember.
That's when
I wasn't there.
I think that's when I became the village idiot. But we'll see. But talking about Begins, you know, as I said, I was younger than everybody else.
Yeah.
And on my 17th birthday, me, Bobby, Johnny, Mike Worrell, I think it was Pat Orvis, Darby Dent, I think, because Darby was hanging out with us that time a little bit. I had turned 17. They took me to Happy Robin's on 217th Street, if you remember that place.
Yeah, I do.
It's all the beer you can drink. And Mike Worrell had brought me a bottle of Southern Comfort.
Yeah, that was Mike Worrell's drink.
Yes, and I drank it. And I ended up being really, really drunk. And Johnny Begins took me home to his house and put me in his, I think it was his sister's bedroom or something, and I couldn't get out of the bedroom. I'm knocking on the door, I'm going crazy, and and his father came and opened the door and he says, "What's going on?" I said, "I just want to go home. I just want to go home." But Johnny Begins' father thought it was my 18th birthday.
Oh,
and he always tells that story like, "My dad always thought it was your 18th birthday." And you were just, he eventually just took you home because you were just so upset that you got locked in a bedroom. And I wasn't locked in the bedroom. I was, couldn't find the door.
Yeah, right.
The handle of the door because I was so drunk. But, and I never drank another drink with Southern Comfort ever again in my life.
Yep, yeah.
I can't smell it and I get sick.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I have the same reaction to vodka.
And God bless Michael Worley in heaven now. But
yes, he is. Yeah, yeah. We lost Michael recently. Charlie. And, Charlie O.
Yeah, me and Charlie came pretty close at the end. A year when we were at Bobby's house, and we would talk at least every 2 weeks about.
No kidding.
Yeah, just yeah, and then he passed away. It was kind of. I think about him often.
What was Charlie's life like at that time? I mean, he and I wrote to each other. Believe it or not, I've got a bunch of Charlie O'Reilly letters that on my shelf over here. You know, when people wrote to me, I always saved them. And Charlie used to agonize over writing letters, and he used to always say to me, "I feel like when I send you a letter, like you're going to correct it." And I said, no, I don't correct anybody's letters. He's like, okay, because I don't think I write as good as you. And I said, no, you write perfect. You write just like you. And so he's like, okay, all right, I'll try to write more. And I have quite a number of letters from him, and I know he agonized over every single one of them.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, because we reconnected at Bobby's house for, I don't know. And then we would stay up to 4 o'clock in the morning just talking about life and different things.
Yeah.
And he, to me, he always had a great attitude, you know. But that was around me. I don't know what he was around other, you know, we would just talk about life and how good it is. And, I don't know. Yeah, just said that he had to go that way.
Yeah. So he had a girl when he passed away, right? A girlfriend?
Yeah. She was a cop.
Mm-hmm. Oh, really? I didn't know that. I met her once. I was over Joe Howard's house, and Charlie showed up. I don't know what kind of, like a little get together, I guess. And I had come in from out of town, and Joe called up a bunch of people and said, "Hey, you know, Mickey's here. Come on over," kind of thing. And I saw Charlie, and then I met this girl, but she was never quite introduced to me, so I never understood who she was in relationship to Charlie. I know they came in together, but I didn't get their relationship.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was a long time girlfriend he had.
Yeah.
Because he worked for the Jamaica Water Company.
Right.
Well, first originally, I think Con Ed or was Jamaica and then moved to Con Ed or something like that.
Yeah.
And it was just kind of sudden that he just passed, though. But
well, yeah. I mean, I think he literally walked out of a bar and didn't quite make it to his car.
Right. Yeah. Died of a massive heart attack, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. It was just that quick that he had passed.
He was one of the reasons why I decided to. Because I retired about 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago, and decided to travel the country. He had passed away, and a couple more friends of mine passed away. I'm like, what am I doing?
Yeah.
I need to see the rest of this country. So me and my wife packed up, and we sold our home, got a condo, and decided to travel the country for a whole year.
Where'd you go?
We went to when started in actually Nashville with Bobby Green and Marion Green for a birthday. And then we went all through the Northeast. I went a stayed a week all the way down south. Spent a couple months in Florida. Then went every 4 or 5 days across the southern through Louisiana, Mississippi, Texas, Arizona, California, Nevada. Oregon, Washington State.
Just in a car, or did you have like an RV?
I had a motorhome, yeah. So we did it in a motorhome.
Wow.
Yes. And it was wonderful. Because, you know, you had COVID, you know, COVID had just ended, you know, not ended, but, you know, all you could hear is the bad news in this world. And then you get out there in the real world, and it's just wonderful, wonderful people. there's so many great people in this country that
yeah,
I am so proud to be part of this country because of it. Because of this, you listen to all this bullshit on TV, everybody's bad. That's so nice.
Well, you know what? I always tell folks that everybody needs to move away from the country. And then when you move back, you really appreciate what you have.
Totally.
But if you've never been outside the country, it's very easy to sit here and throw stones because you don't know what everybody else has. But you know, for someone like me that has lived really all over the world, you know, when I came back in 2015, I almost, you know, kissed the ground. I was just so happy to be home. And home meaning the United States, you know, back to that feeling again. And it doesn't mean that there aren't problems here. Of course there are. Yeah. But when you're around the world, you realize just how good we have it here. Like, mm-hmm. Unbelievable. My wife is an Israeli. And, you know, when we first moved here, it was a real culture shock for her. But she just loves it here now.
Right. Yeah, I lived in England and traveled all over Europe, Spain and Turkey, and been in Iraq, many places, man.
Yeah, but I think that's when you appreciate home.
Totally, yeah. Yep, and that's why what are we going to do with our, I wanted to see our country. I didn't want to go to all the tourist traps. I wanted to go to the tourist traps and see, you know, the big stuff, but I wanted to stay in little towns and talk to normal people. And
I did that when I was in my 30s. I did that, and I was in every state in the union. Wonderful. Visited every state. Took me years to do it. I didn't do it as a trip, but over time I made sure that I was in every state. I did a lot of it driving, but yeah, I've set foot in every single state in the union, and I'm proud of that. You know, it feels good.
Mm-hmm. But it, you know, and growing up, it's it kind of helped me growing up the way I did, because I'm not shy.
That's right. Do you keep in touch with anybody now?
Oh, sure. Yeah, a lot of people. I'm going to say a lot. Johnny Beggins, yes. Bobby Green. I see Bobby about 3 or 4 times a year.
Really? How?
Through trips. He comes to a golf outing that I have in Ohio, that we have as a family. My wife's family has in Ohio. And that's from my wife's family. He comes to that every year. Been to Nashville. I go to, you know, up to his place in Lake George. Just anytime we get opportunity to see him. Johnny Beggins, anytime I'm in Florida, because I stay in Florida now I go in October, November 1st, and I come back in March.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I'm like a snowbird.
Yeah.
And we go down there, and we stay for 5 months. And then Darby Dent, Kevin Conboy, James Conboy. And as my, you know, your life expands, you know, there's a lot of other people that didn't hang out at the park, but I still, like, I don't know, John Agunzo, if you remember him, or.
I do. I remember the name. I can't quite
picture. Remember growing up with Doug Seacat? Seacat was in the military with me.
When I was living in Israel, I got a phone call. And I pick up the phone, and the guy says, hey, Mickey. Now, immediately, you know, nobody calls me Mickey, right? So immediately I'm like, okay, what part of Queens Village are you from? And he says, this is Doug Seacat. And I said, get out of town. The hell are you calling me? So he said, listen, I'm in Tel Aviv. Would you be willing to come up and see me? I said, when? I'm on my way. Tell me when. And so I have a picture of him and I, standing in a hotel lobby in Tel Aviv. I went up and spent a couple hours. We had lunch together and kind of hung out for a little bit. He had left the military and was still doing work as a contractor.
Right.
I can't remember exactly what the details of it was, but yeah, I saw Doug in Israel. Funny enough.
Yeah, I think he was a hiring manager for different military jobs overseas. I think he's doing.
Yeah,
you know, it's so funny. I didn't know he because he never hung out at Braddock Park, really.
Well, he did. I'll confess. So when he came over, I said, I need to say something to you that I need to get off my chest. And he said, what's that? And I said, I don't think we treated you well or nicely when you used to come to the park. You were a kid that we picked on. And he said, I don't remember that. I don't remember that. And I said, really? You yanking my chain or you're serious? And he said, no, I loved coming to the park. I have great, memories of hanging out there with you guys. And I was like, okay, well, then we're going to leave it alone then. I'm going to accept that version of the truth. Wow. And we're going to move forward. But between you and I,
you know, what was so weird, because we were in the military and we actually did the same job. He was actually one of my bosses at the time.
No way.
Yeah.
No
and way. He was like, he says, Johnny Beccaro. I'm like, yeah. I said, like, you know me? But I could hear his New York accent, you know? And I'm like,
yeah, sure.
Where do I know you? I'm thinking Holy Cross. He says, no, I used to hang out at Braddock Park with you. And I'm like, no, you didn't.
Yeah. Well, first of all, the way he looks as a man, it does not even resemble the way he looks as a child.
Right. He even said he went to one of my New Year's Eve parties. And I'm like, what?
I don't doubt that at all. But literally, when I saw him, I'm staring at him saying, I can't find the kid in this man's body. Like, I don't see it at all.
Right.
His facial features, you know, nothing. He weighed about 80 pounds soaking wet as a kid. And he was very, very Asian looking. He had a very strong Asian look to him. And as a man, he still looks, you know, somewhat Asian, but not like he used to.
Well, his house was in that movie.
Yeah, what was that? Was it the guy?
Goodfellas. Goodfellas. Yeah, he was in Goodfellas. Yeah.
Yeah, he had that big yellow house.
Right. Right. I remember that. Yeah, just when I saw him, I'm like, wow.
That's amazing that you guys could run into each other in the military, though.
Yes. After
that's crazy.
We did the same job, but he was in a different area, and then he became down in Texas where my headquarters was, and he was one of the big boys down there. And he called me up, Johnny Beccaro. Is that Johnny Beccaro? You hung out at Bragg Park? I'm like, no, I don't remember you.
But, what did you do in the military?
I was a recruiter for a long time.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, I recruited high school kids, doctors, nurses, pilots, engineers. Wow. Yeah, I was in charge of recruiting. That's how I got here. I was in charge of this area for from 1999 to 2004. And that's how I got in Milwaukee, because I fell in love with the Midwest. So that's how I got here and stayed here.
Wow. Fascinating.
Time.
You know, you don't see too many of us who escaped, you know.
That's true. Well, now people are moving to Florida.
When I got married, I got married in Washington, D.C. And for most of the guys that came, they were like, this is the first time I've ever, you know, I mean, I was in New Jersey once, but never further than that, you know.
Growing up, Brooklyn, I mean, the other side of the tracks was like Marion Green talking to Bobby's wife. She grew up on the other side of the tracks. The other side of the tracks to me was foreign country. Jamaica
Avenue. Yeah, Jamaica, that's right. Literally the other side of the tracks.
Yeah, and it was like, wow. Man,
I'll tell you, once I started traveling, I fell in love with it. I really enjoy traveling the world, and I've been all over the place and had that privilege. But again, it always made me appreciate home all the more.
Right. So what do you buy and sell like
businesses? I sell I buy and sell healthcare businesses.
Oh, nice. Nice.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, it's all home runs. You know, I can do no business for a couple of months and then have a sale, and it's, you know, a huge sale. So,
right.
But I'm probably the largest person who does that in the eye care business.
Oh, wow.
I probably do 30 to 40 sales a year.
Nice.
Yeah. Right. So it's a great business. I like it because every single one is a little different. And it really requires a lot of good communication skills, and tests my patients on a pretty regular basis. And and they're all a little bit different, so they take a lot of creativity. And you're doing everything. You know, you're doing finance. I'm working with bankers. I do a lot of legal work. It's a bit of everything. So right. I enjoy it immensely. It's really a lot of fun. I haven't worked in an office for 25 years.
God bless you.
I work from wherever I'm standing. You know, that I need a computer and a phone, and I'm good to go.
It's a beautiful thing, right?
It is an amazing thing. I don't miss the office, you know, bullshit that goes on.
Right.
I do. Sometimes I do get a little bit cagey at home because I'm home all day. You know, so you go out and get a coffee somewhere or something like that. Go have a beer with some neighbors or something. But I love it. I really enjoy it.
Nice.
Kids? I've got three. I've got two older boys, and a 9-year-old who's at home.
Oh wow.
Yeah, and he's just spectacular. So keeps me young, keeps me fit, you know. Yeah. Still playing, still throwing a football in the afternoons and stuff like
nice.
That. Yes, it's great. It's really great. But you know, the loss of some of our colleagues, you know, especially Michael Wuerl, really got me motivated to say, I don't want to find out that we lost somebody else and I didn't get a chance to talk to them.
Right.
You know, I don't, you know, shame on me for letting this go when we lost Charlie, and really shame on me when we lost Mike. And so I'm on a mission to, again, just collect our stories and then share them back with everybody. I think everybody will have a hoot when they listen to some of the things that are being said. It's just a great pleasure. You know, it's a unique pleasure to connect with people that you grew up with and who know you in a very, in a unique way.
Yes, you know? Sure.
And you know them in a unique way. There's something very pleasurable about it. What got me started, so Chris and I, we see each other maybe once a year on business trips, and he came out to San Francisco and I had dinner with him. Now you would think that at this point in our lives, we have told the same story, you know, 55 times, and there is nothing new to say. You know, we have exhausted the world of Queens Village stories. So we're at dinner in San Francisco, and Chris starts telling me this story, and I said, "Get the fuck out of here! I've never heard this before. This is impossible." You know, we're 62 years old, and you're telling me a story for the first time. This is nuts. So it got me motivated to say, okay, I got to start capturing these things so that we have them, you know, we're not going to be around forever.
Right.
That's true. I'm trying to connect with Paulie Sojin. He lost his brother recently.
Yes, I know. Yes.
And, I called him to express my condolences and he didn't pick up. And I must have called him 15 times since then, and he hasn't picked up. I'm a little worried about him. So I'm trying to connect with him, and just making my way around the group.
And who else did you do interviews with? Riles always.
Riles, Beggins, Chris, Howard.
It was great seeing him. I saw him about 3 years ago at Bobby's house. I always remember his boots.
Chris?
No, Riles, his boots.
Oh, yeah.
His blue boots. I think that was at my house.
At your house, and I was the one who took that picture. Yeah.
Yeah, the boots, the blue boots.
Yeah.
And his love for the Rolling Stones.
Yeah, I have to tell you that
Charlie.
So when I spoke with him, Riles has changed a little bit, but not a lot. But his cadence of speaking was very slow and very deliberate. And he said, what I've decided to do for this phone call is to tell you the stories that I tell my kids. And I said, I think that's a great idea. He said, so I'm just going to tell you those stories that I tell them at bedtime. And I said, go for it. And they were great. They were really, really, really funny. Now, what's hysterical is I have this character. His name is Paulie Blobstein. And it's a character that I used to create stories around based on Paulie Sojin. And I would put my kids to bed and they would say, tell us a story about Paulie Blobstein. And I'd say, okay, let me see. And it was this story about a fat kid that, has these adventures happen, right?
Right.
And so it was kind of funny to hear Riles also say, yeah, I told my kids all about you guys, but they've never met you, that kind of thing. But Riles has some great stories. And again, Riles lived right around the corner from me. I knew him at a much, I knew Charlie first. My oldest sister, one of my older sister, Nancy, was very good friends with Charlie's older brother.
Okay.
And so my sister used to take me to Charlie's house as an excuse to go visit his brother. And it was before kindergarten. Charlie and I would play Hot Wheels in his basement. He had a Hot Wheels track, and we would play Hot Wheels in his basement for hours. Who knows what my sister and his brother were doing upstairs, but we were content to play downstairs with Hot Wheels.
Now, were you with Charlie when he broke his neck? Weren't you?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So
I thought so.
Yeah. And actually spent a lot of time in the hospital with him afterwards. I have to say that my memory of that is not a good one. I really thought he was going to die. Now, I didn't have a good understanding of the mechanics of it, but I thought he broke his neck, which he sort of did. Right. I remember telling my mom that I was very, very worried that we would lose him. And so I was so scared of this idea that I spent a lot of time in the hospital just looking at him, like just talking to him for fear that he might leave,
Right.
But I can remember that was a very, traumatic.
That's what I always blame his dance. That's why I always blame his dancing on his neck problem.
Well, after that, I used to look at him and think, did they remove a vertebrae? Why is his head so close to his shoulders?
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, but he had a pretty big scar up.
Yeah, certainly did.
Yeah, so he and I were very, very close. He used to, I used to make up names for people. And one day I called him Chuck, and he loved this. He thought this was the best name. And whenever I slipped and I'd call him Charlie, he'd go, hey, what do you mean? Call me Chuck. I told you to call me Chuck. And I was like, okay, sorry, Chuck. he was a great guy. I adored the guy. I thought he was just a superhuman being.
Yeah, when I talk to people about when I was growing up, they're still amazed that we can, I'm 62 years old, and there's still a bond there somewhat, and I don't have a negative word to say about anybody growing up.
Yeah. Well, it's amazing. Joe Howard said something very interesting to me. He said, a couple of weeks ago, I flew to New York and I landed in it, and he said, I forgot to to tell anybody I was coming. So he said, I got off the plane and I put a little group together of text messages, and I texted five guys, and within 10 minutes, we were all meeting for dinner that evening.
Right.
And he said, and for me, that's what growing up with these guys is like, that I have no doubt that if I came to San Francisco and I said, hey, you want to meet for dinner? You would say, when?
Right.
And there's no question of, well, I don't know, you know, my kids, they're busy and I'm busy and maybe I'll catch you next time. He said that never happens with us as a group. We drop everything and we accommodate each other. And he said, and that's unique, you know, because I don't know other people that I would do that for. You know, I might be too busy for a lot of other people, you know, or might be inconvenient or whatever. But when someone from Queens Village calls, you know, and says, hey, I'm in Tel Aviv, can you come see me?
Right.
You're like, I'm on my way.
What do you mean? Yeah.
And it's a lot of pleasure to do that. But my wife was with me in New York 1 year, and we met Pauly Sojan and his wife, and I think Chris and his wife, and a few other people. And afterwards, my wife said, I was getting a little bit concerned because Pauly Sojan just kept kissing you.
Right.
I said, yeah. Yeah, I should not have sat next to him. You're right. You know, he's just that Italian, you know, he's just that guy, and he can't help it. So next time I'll sit on the other side of the table, it'll kind of slow it down a little bit. It won't prevent it, but it will slow it down a little bit.
Yeah. My wife's from Ohio, and we would always go back home, and she was like, why do they always want to hug and kiss me? They don't even know me. I said, well, that's just what we do.
That's right. Yeah. It's great.
Everybody wants to hug and kiss you. I'm like, yeah, that's the way it is.
Yeah, yeah. I'm like, okay, Pauly, you know, you're killing me here. My face is wet.
That's funny.
Yeah. All right. Well, Johnny V, it was great catching up with you. I feel like it's been a cone's age since you and I spoke.
No kidding. It's been, I was thinking the last time.
And I got your email address. So once I get all these done, I'm not going to get them all done before I post them, but I want to get a body of them done, and then I'll post it and I'll send you a link, and then, you know, you could send that out to other people, you know, and hopefully other people will say, hey, you know, I'd like to be on there. You
know? I know I was talking to Darby Dent today, and he said he would love to be on there.
I would love to talk to Darby Dent. I haven't seen Darby, since our, I think we had a reunion when we were 35 or 40. No.
Right.
Yeah, it must have been 40 because he had just retired. And it was out on Long Island. I can't remember.
At the anyway. Deutschplank? Was it the Deutschplank? At the Deutschplank?
Out on the island. I don't remember the name of the place.
Okay.
It was like a VFW room, you know, like just a big room. But I saw Darby there, and he was not in good shape at that time. I don't know how he's feeling today, but at that time he was not doing so good.
Yeah, his back is he got back issues, or was he drinking still?
Because
he hasn't drank in a long time.
I think a little. Yeah, I think it was a little bit of both.
Okay.
I think the back issues were causing the drinking issues.
Yeah, I think, he quit drinking a long time ago. Well, not a long time ago.
Well, if you have an email or a phone number for him, I'd love to talk with him.
Great. Yep. I know he said something about he would love to do it.
Super. Text me his information or give him mine.
Okay.
And we'll go from there.
Sounds good.
All right, John. All right, thank
great
you.
Great talking to you.
All right. See you soon.
All right. Bye.